Hello there, and welcome to the Thinky Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I'm joined by Pastor Paul Koch and my father, Scott Keith. We're back to some mobile recording. I think people got really excited. They heard us in the studio again.
Yeah, it was fun.
You, Adam, Rod, and I. And the reality is that we can do that a little bit more than we have been able to over the last couple of months, but still because of scheduling and sort of the complications around coronavirus, we're still including.
Sorry, I don't have a cough button here.
We are still including some online and Zoom calls. And you know what? Even if and when things return to totally normal, we might start and keep doing this on the show because we've figured out the process now too. And we've had people ask, you know, for years, hey, can you do a call-in episode? Because it'd be great to have so-and-so on the show, but they live in, you know, the Midwest or something like that, or on the East Coast, and they're not coming to California anytime soon.
Or they're in Germany 6 months out of the year.
Yeah, or they're in Germany 6 months out of the year. And so we now figured out that process, and so we want to keep doing this. We have Paul on the show again today, who people, you know, if you've listened to the show for a while, or even if you've only been listening for the last couple months, you'll probably recognize. Paul has come on the show multiple times to talk about preaching, to talk about vocation. And the last time you were on the show, you talked about the decision to keep a church open or closed during coronavirus and the difficulties around that decision, particularly in your circumstance, because you remained open for a long period of time. And we had also had other pastors on the show before that who had remained, who had closed. And so we had sort of a wide group of voices explaining what prompted them to make the decisions they made. And then also, I think, some of the fallout of those decisions and consequences, both positively and negatively. And so I think those ended up being a good set of episodes because it established that there was sort of regionally and specifically a decision-making process to go through, and that the decision wasn't uniform across the board about that. So today, I want to do a little bit more of this because we've been talking about the last two episodes we recorded in person were primarily about epistemology. We did one on sort of how can faith engage in politics, or what's the value and limitations of that. We talked a lot about the two kingdoms on that episode. And then we did a second episode after that about faith and science, and particularly the scientific method, the difference between science and scientism, and how a person of faith can reject scientism on the premise that it is another religion while still accepting and operating scientifically here in this life. So I have a Wall Street Journal article title to read, and then I would like to talk about this from the perspective of the faith, how this affects what we consider is important, if ideas can be as important or more important than physical reality, all of that. So,
all right, hit it.
Okay, so this is it might have been an opinion piece. Okay, so I don't see. So if somebody goes, well, that's an opinion piece, so it doesn't matter. I'm just saying that out here. But the title is, "Are Protests Unsafe? What Experts Say May Depend on Who's Protesting and What They're Protesting." All right.
Sorry.
In the article, it goes on to compare two types of protests going on right now. The protests over police brutality and racial issues, as well as the protests against coronavirus closures. And in the article, it uses some anecdotes from medical experts in the U.S. who claim that the protests against police brutality are perfectly safe and good to participate in, and that the protests against remaining closed because of the coronavirus are dangerous.
Well, even if this is an opinion piece, this isn't the first time we've heard this in the last month or so. I don't have the names in front of me because I'm lounging on a couch right now, but There were at least that I read, and I think one of them was in Wall Street Journal. The other one must have been, I think, the New York Post. 3 to 4 epidemiologists who came out right as the George Floyd protests and Black Lives Matter protests began. And basically, as epidemiologists said, that because racism is
a disease, you
know, itself a pandemic disease,
yeah,
that this is necessary. And I had the same reaction to this Wall Street Journal article post, a title as that. That's a fine opinion, but that is not science. And that's not epidemiology, yeah, especially. I mean, epidemiology is literally the study, yep, of the cell, you know, the bacteriological cells or the viral cells that cause literal disease to your human anatomy. It's not about societal issues or the impact of society, you know, these societal issues on individuals. It's literally the study of what causes you to be sick, what infects your body and your cells, and causes you to be sick. It's biology. It's not anthropology. It's not sociology. It's not philosophy. And at best, these statements are philosophical.
Yeah.
And at worst, I think all my sociologist friends, man, I don't really have many sociologist friends. So, you know, at worst, it's sociology. You know, yeah, and it's, yeah, and this is, I don't even know how to, how do you even respond to that in a sort of meaningful way? It's, if Dr. Montgomery were here, I'd say thank you for teaching me the category of meaningless statements, because I've just encountered yet another one.
I think if he was here, you know, if anybody listens, you can listen to Christianity on Trial classic episodes where he was on the radio. And he did this Legal Loon Award where he's got this noise-making toy, yeah, that he just blasts into the microphone.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what he would do here.
Yeah, I mean, because the reason this is meaningless is because it's impossible to verify the veracity of the statement as truth, and it's impossible to falsify. Thus, it's just, you know, bluggly blug.
So I think one of the things to talk about, and that's interesting here, is the manipulation and rapid change of a definition of a word for the sake of an agenda, I think, which is the word safe in the title.
Oh boy.
Is it safe, right? And the definition, because it's associating itself with coronavirus, I think it would be safe to assume that where your mind is going is about the risks of contracting coronavirus, the risk of becoming sick, the risk of, yeah, dying, those types of risk. And that's where your mind goes when you hear safe in this context, right?
Well, the funny thing is that, say, like when Paul was on the show last time or whatever time it was, and he was talking about his church staying open, he definitely brought into that some risk assessment, right? And he even acknowledged that there is some risk,
sure,
to coming. That is not something you've heard a lot of in this discussion politically, or even just in the news media. You've not really heard a lot of people being given the, you know, carte blanche to do a self analysis of risk and their own level of risk aversion, or in order to decide whether to participate in going to a bar or to a sporting event or to whatever. They've just been told you can't, because it's not safe for you and it's not safe for other people. And so when they bring in sort of a formal risk analysis,
right,
that I'm now able to apply to myself,
right,
over this one issue, if you're a thinking person at all, I think you do have to ask why this issue, why this instance, and not other instances. And I don't even bring church into it at this moment, right? Why not, sure, this instance and not going to the doctor for an elective surgery? Why not this instance and going to a restaurant or going to a restaurant? You know, why just this instance? And also, just throw this one out there. Why? I almost cussed really bad.
Don't.
Why? why is it dependent on people telling us?
Yeah.
I mean, except in this issue. And yet, and still, even in this issue, people have to tell us.
Yeah, well, in the,
yeah,
the issue, I think, again, with the definition is that the risk, what this article says is that the risk assessment does not only include medical circumstances, which is sort of what we've been led to believe, right? Is that risk assessment had to do with your
sociological
ability to contract the disease or not, and the risk of that. Well, it turns out risk...
And you giving it to other people.
It turns out now the risk assessment can actually additionally be philosophical things. Right? It can be, is X protest important or not? And now the question is who gets to determine what's the operating philosophy of something that's important or unimportant, what's necessary or what's optional?
Well, can I get a chart? Can I get a checklist?
Well, you do have one. I mean, the state of California provided one, actually.
Did they really?
Yeah. I mean, they.
I should have used it when we went out to lunch today.
Texas did this as well. They provided a chart of thing. It's basically got degrees. It's color coded. These things are the safest things you could do. These things are the least safe you can do. And people started noticing.
There was protesting on it.
Protesting was not on the list at all. Oh. Didn't make the list. Because and so you have an interesting flow there. People started noticing inconsistencies, right? So in the green of things that were perfectly safe to do, grocery shopping was in there. But in the red of
I've seen how they sanitize those grocery carts. I'm not sure I agree with that assessment.
Well, and then this one, and then in the red, in the highest risk category, was shopping at a mall. And so
why would that be?
Yeah, and so people started having questions. Right. Is this because of one's for essential items, so we want to encourage people that they can still go out and do that? One is deemed non-essential.
I would think the grocery carts alone would, on an objective basis, amplify the risk if we're just doing straight shopping. Wouldn't me touching a grocery cart as opposed to not touching a grocery cart,
or
say if I go to the Gap to get a new pair of cargo pants,
or if it's about proximity, right? Inside of your local, if you're in California here, Stater Brothers or Vons or something like that.
If you're in Big Bear,
and you're in Big Bear, and those are your two options, and then go into Crystal Court down in Costa Mesa and notice how much space you have between people, right? Yeah. And so you have So you have questions to start asking.
Yeah. I mean, these things just, it all falls apart. So, I mean, that was the thing. I remember where my church is, I think I talked last time in there, where my church is located is right across the street from the county seat. So the big government center's here, which put a lot of pressure on us, you know, whether we stayed open or not. As we kind of pressed on and did that and made that stand, there were protests out there for making, trying to get things back open up. And I went over for the first time ever in my life and joined a protest, and it was fun. And I documented some of it on Instagram, because that's the only social media I have. And I had people who were upset, what you are doing is risky behavior, and you are going to, slow the
have
opening.
You met me?
You're gonna make it problematic. It's going to just keep going on. So you're going to spread the virus. And then it was maybe a month after that, that right at the same location, there was a massive Black Lives Matter protest. And then it was like crickets. You didn't hear all the people upset that people were gathering together in mass numbers. So I think articles like that, in one sense, why they don't make sense, they're at least honest. I mean, they're at least saying,
hey, this is the way we're operating.
We've got a narrative we want to get out there, and we can't shut down all these protests, just the ones that we don't like or we're not supportive or whatever. And so it causes everyone to just kind of wonder, now what the hell do you do?
Yeah.
I mean, where do you turn? What can we base this off of? And it just gets frustrating. And I do think part of the solution is what you were talking about, Scott, is like, you know, let me just be an adult and assess my own risk.
This is 2020. No one's going to let you do that.
Yeah. Well, when our congregation, when we went back to full, just regular church service, which we did on Pentecost Sunday, I sent out an email and I said, a lot of people are asking me, you know, what are our protocols? Are you going to have hand washing stations? Is there an in and an out that's separate? Is there, are you going to wear face masks? Are we roping off pews? And I told the congregation, I said, we're not doing any of that. You are all adults. And when you get here, you assess the level of risk you're willing to take, you know? So if you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. If you don't want to wear a mask, don't wear a mask. I mean, that's your choice. And the response was wonderful. You know, people are showing up. We're not quite back to our numbers before everything shut down, but we're pretty close. And now we're sucking in people from other churches too, which is kind of nice. We're going rogue. We're pulling them all in. Because there's a lot of places that just still aren't open. And everyone's had their own choice, or even ability to make that choice or to act upon it taken from them. You know, it's always somebody else is making all these decisions, and to kind of give that back and say, go ahead and, you know, make your choice. If you want to do this, go for it, is really freeing. And it creates a very, robust and even kind of, radical nature amongst the people. Like, they want to be a part of this thing that is not just going with the flow, which is in a sense maybe gets us to something we've missed in Christianity for a lot of years. You know, we don't have to just be lockstep with our government, our
or even
our own community,
or even the sense that participating in the life of faith is worth risking something for.
Yeah.
Because none of us in our lifetimes have had to risk anything to be a Christian. Sure. I mean, nothing significant at least. Yep. And I'm not saying that it's, you know, the more you have to risk to be a Christian, the better. But I'm not saying that either. But it is interesting. I mean, to me, that this is a real, it's a real eye opener, you know, the fact that your church has stayed open. I think I texted you, I forgot what the instance was. It might have been at the instance of the first mass protests that weren't being sort of shouted down as dangerous, dangerous, dangerous. Yeah. Even though they objectively in many places were dangerous, dangerous, dangerous.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
And I think I texted you and said, man, you called it. You know, this is in a sense all of a pretext for something else. And one of the things I think is interesting is at least here in California. So if I understand it, they're allowing churches to be open with some quote unquote limitations. And one of those is you're not supposed to sing. Mm-hmm. And I even heard one radio thing said that pastors aren't supposed to chant. And I was like, well, but the protests are still okay. So are the protesters being told that when they show up to the protest that they're not supposed to chant their protest? Yeah. Or is it just churches being told that you can neither sing nor chant your protest? And even in the title of the article, you know, the title of the article implies at least that there are some things so that you believe so strongly that it's the importance of that belief supersedes the possible danger.
Right.
Right.
Well, I think that's actually the best part of the whole thing.
Have you?
Yeah.
I mean, have you heard anybody else heard or read or seen all of the studies which say that, you know, having a vibrant faith life
is or that
an
important?
Active faith life, you know, will extend your life, you know, that'll make you a happier person and all of these things, you know, people even recover from cancer at a higher rate. Yet this is not such an important belief that we need to prioritize it.
Yeah, I think that's the question that this leaves you with, right? Because some of it is, well, duh, we've noticed that there's been a priority in philosophy since the beginning. I think we called that out even in some of the episodes where we were advocating for restricting.
Oh, you post all of the post Easter episodes where it was like even churches that were trying. I'll say like our own church, my own church, which was trying to very much follow the rules and tried to have like a drive up service for Easter.
And every day the rules changed.
And they were threatened. Mm-hmm. They were threatened that the police were going to show up if they went through with having a drive up service where people were stayed in their own cars.
Right. And so, I mean, I think it was obvious that there were some decisions made, and then a lot of those decisions, philosophical, were then hidden behind the guise of, well, the experts, the scientists said so.
The people in the know.
And now we know for just blatantly certain that those decisions have been laid out as partially philosophical, or that they can mm-hmm. be. And so that leaves us with the question, you know, is church as important as a protest? Is it more important than a protest? Is it worth the risk? When you have a risk-benefit scenario, is it one of those ones where you can actually consider taking on the risk of contracting this virus for the sake of attending? And, I mean, I think we would all say yes to that question.
I would, and let me kind of give the, you know, I guess a broad brushes of sort of our, where we've landed on this over the past several months. You know, there was a time when the risk of death from contracting coronavirus seemed, from the reports that we were getting, to be very, very high for everyone. I mean, the first couple of weeks of this thing, you know, they basically were giving us the message that if you got this, the chance that you were going to die was very, very high. And then at that point, they still didn't even have information on who was contracting it more than others. Were older people dying more than younger people? We still didn't have that all that information. That, to me, was a bit of a different risk assessment picture than the picture we have now. And I guess one of the things I'd say is it's more scientific to say, here's the data, right? The contraction rate is this. The current death to contraction rate is this. This is the age group that's contracting. This is the age group that's, you know, the percentage of who's going to die in this age group and da da da. And let me choose. And under that circumstance, I would say not only is church more important than protesting for the average person, but it's a risk assessment no-brainer compared to a protest. Like at church, at most of the churches I've ever been to in my life, if I need to stay 6 feet away from somebody, that's entirely possible, especially if the church sort of like opens up the hallways in the back a little bit. You know, as opposed to the pictures of these protests where I've seen where you're talking about tens of thousands of people stacked on top of each other. So just like from an actual, what is the data about my risk of contracting this at Paul's church, you know, that can probably seat 350 and maybe has 100 people on it on a service right now, as opposed to going to a 10,000 person protest where we're stacked on top of each other? Of course it's safer to go to church, number one. And secondly, of course that belief, and this can be even to some degree objectively shown, is important to a person's life, even if the faith they're practicing isn't true. Now, how much does that amp up if the faith they're practicing is true? Right? In our case, we'd say we it is. Not only do we believe that, but we have some evidence that can point to that reality. Even more important, because now you're talking about importance not only for you here in this life, but in the life of the world to come, too. So, hell yes. Heck yes.
I think, you know, the way we saw all this play out, to be honest, I amongst my colleagues, I think a lot more of them should have been listening to their members rather than each other.
Well, that's an interesting thing to say. What I mean by that is,
there were, there, you know, I have a lot of members who are definitely in the high risk category. I have one guy, two guys for sure, who have never missed this whole time. And these guys, if they get this coronavirus, will probably die. I mean, they're not, they are, they have all the markers. They shouldn't be out. But for them, it was that important. And this is that crucial to their life and their livelihood and the way they, their joy and their confidence and their assurance, and that they were willing to take all those risks. And they were kind of, they were just, they not were, they still, they're just fine with it. They're like, if I get it, then, you know, I lose that battle, then that's fine. You know, they're kind of, you know, they're older, they're in those health risk categories. And I think a lot of pastors, they didn't listen to enough of those folks, and they listened to maybe a church bureaucracy that was concerned about lawsuits and things like that, and went along with state mandated guidelines, which my belief is this is going to have lasting impact on the institutional church.
I think it will too. I think the door's been opened.
I went to church two Sundays ago. I always joke around about that because I don't go to church very often, where I just get to sit, or as I like to say, I'm subjected to what everyone else is usually subjected to. And the pastor basically, he said that it was, so this church went, they went down the line. There was the social distancing force. You had to wear a mask. There was no singing. All these things, bizarre communion ritual. And he said at the beginning, he said, we've been allowed to open. But to do so, we've been given very strict guidelines. So we've amended our worship practice to meet to those guidelines and those standards, and where you can applaud them for doing what it takes to get people back to church. It also sent, I think, a clear message that they are operating now at the whim of the state. The state is dictating how they're going to do this. And I don't know how you walk back out of that, to be honest.
You don't.
And you've conveyed that to all your people, too, as a pastor. You've said, yeah, this is good and right and such. This is how we're going to do it. You know, they'll tell us how we can do it, and we'll just do it the way they say we should do it. So if they say no singing, we won't sing. No chanting, we won't chant. It's dangerous. I think it'll be rough. I've been to enough pastors' conferences in my life, too, to know that this next one we have, if we ever have one again, will be terrible. It'll be people trying to justify a failure on the part of the church to make a stand. And those who will want to speak about it truthfully, like, no, we failed. We didn't make that stand when we should have. I think they'll just be drowned out, and things will be business as usual.
You know, what's interesting is after Easter, I think I might have even said this on the show that you were on, I really expected to see just a host or hear of a host of lawsuits against municipalities and state governments and even the federal government for some of the atrocious behavior from law enforcement that you saw on, you know, videos and whatnot, for, you know, chasing parishioners, blocking parking lots to church and this and that. And I haven't heard of one. Now, it doesn't mean that one hasn't been filed, but I stay somewhat informed on this kind of thing, and I haven't heard of a significant one. I even expected our own synod through the LCLR or whatever, RL, to maybe have a statement an intent to file a motion or a lawsuit. And to my knowledge, that hasn't happened. And it's just, what you're saying rings really true, because I just there's, I can't think of many instances in history at all where people have given in to give over power that they had for their own liberty to any authority
and get it back,
right.
And that authority willingly give it back.
Right.
To get some of that back, such things take revolutions. And, yeah. You know, I will say yeah, we though, were... this is going to be the risk of being a little overly political, but what the heck. I did very much enjoy, and I'm not even a fireworks person, to be honest with you, but I did very much enjoy the little spasm of rebellion that Californians had on 4th of July. When our governor shut down public fireworks shows, the people took over and put on fireworks shows. Massive fireworks show that lasted forever.
Thank goodness not in Big Bear, though, because, it would have burned to the ground.
That's a different scenario. If people would have done that in Big Bear, the whole state would be on fire at this point.
Yeah.
But, no, you're right. Same with you. I'm not a, you know, I kind of got over fireworks years ago. I don't, you know, I'm not a guy to go to a fireworks show, but we were at some friend's house, and it was insane. The fireworks everywhere in Ventura was nuts.
Yeah. Which is kind of scary in Ventura, too, given the fire a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. People were just, man, they didn't, it was a beautiful act of rebellion. It really was.
Yeah.
Just to kind of do that.
A bunch of people that don't say much.
That
are,
in our Synod, upset. You were talking earlier about you expected a bigger, some sort of response, and that was all a big letdown to me too. And now, to be honest, it's not like I look to the bureaucracy of our Synod for much leadership usually.
Can I qualify that real quick?
Yeah.
Here's the reason I am, and this is probably going to get us just crucified, Caleb, so time to pay attention.
Yeah, I am paying attention.
I would say this, if it had a purpose, this seems like low hanging
moment, man. This was your moment.
This seems like low hanging fruit to me because it is called the Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty.
Yeah. Now my buddies and I, we had a Zoom conference with our district president and these things. So this is all inside baseball for the people that don't know about our church body too much, but they, you know, and we were basically told when my buddies and I said we were, you know, we're open, we're having church, we were told, hey, you're on your own. Like, if a lawsuit comes, don't come looking to us. Like, you've been told that, you ought to go with the mandate sort of thing. And that's kind of the party line that was put forth, at least to us. And that's what we were expected to stay in line with throughout. So it wasn't even that like nothing was said. It was that we were encouraged to just go along with it. And another great opportunity missed, I think, again, to make a stand, to stand for something.
It's interesting, though, because, see, through 15-17, I canceled conferences. And my rationale for canceling conferences was, if there's anything in life that's optional, it's probably going to a conference.
Right, yeah.
You know, it may be that. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not beneficial to go to a conference. It doesn't mean that it's not good. It's just surely optional, was my whole point. Institutionally, if we admit, and you said this, that church is optional, much like a conference, you know, what are we admitting? Yeah. I don't think we're admitting something
What's
good.
What's the point? Yeah.
I don't know. I think that bears some thought as this goes forward, and they are saying that this bounce back isn't even the second wave, that the second wave is still going to come, you know, in October and all this stuff. I mean, it doesn't seem like this will be the last time the church has to wrestle with this. And one of the things I've been saying since it started is we should be really careful about what we do and give into now, because once this has happened, once they've figured out that they can lock us in our houses, they'll try it again if when something else comes up. And I just think we should, especially when it comes to, you know, the church admitting that church is non-essential, we ought to be real careful.
What
happens when the church says church is not essential?
Right.
That'd be a good title for this episode.
Oh, yeah. I might do that. Yeah, I agree. I think there's, I think it's a hard conversation because I don't want the Thinking Fellows to come off as Corona denying like the existence of it, or that you can contract it if you go to church or something like that, that there's a magical bubble around certain buildings that stops you from getting
coronavirus. Paul was clear about that last time he was on.
Yeah.
He's clear about it now. He said that he's got a couple old people that come and they know the risk and they're willing to take the risk.
Right.
Not that there's not a risk because the gospel and the gifts are there.
Right. And so I think, you know, if somebody disagrees with parts of this episode, but surely somebody listening will. Absolutely.
I don't see how that's possible.
The idea trying to be expressed here is that there are decisions to be made, and the decisions are not entirely scientific. They are not entirely without motivation, both personal, philosophical, and political, and that you sort of have to actually understand that your choices and how you react right now will have long-term impacts based on those philosophies that you may have assumed were not there.
So I've seen these
neutral.
I've seen these memes.
Oh no.
I think I know what a meme is. But I think I've seen these memes that like have a statement. You know, the Duramax diesel is better than the Power Stroke. Prove me wrong, right? And it's got a guy sitting in front of a table.
It's got Crowder. Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm trying to be, and I'm probably not pulling it off, somewhat neutral here and just ask a lot of questions. But I will say this. To say that whether or not a mass gathering is dangerous is based on
why you're gathering.
Why you're gathering is nonsense. Yeah. Prove me wrong. Even if you disagree with me, prove me wrong.
Yeah. Right.
Because that's nonsense. That's not science. That is opinion. Again, like I said, at best it's philosophy. At worst it's sociology.
And if you're wrong, people should basically be free to decide what they're doing. There should not be government mandates about which particular gatherings are safe or not safe if you're wrong about that.
Yeah.
And so,
but prove me wrong.
Right. So if
don't just rant or scream or be upset. Prove me wrong.
Right. I mean maybe that's possible. So
hey man, I'm an empiricist. Lots of things are possible, but not as many things have evidence to make them probable.
Well, guys, anything else to add? I mean, I think the Thinking Fellows is an apt name for the show because we literally do an episode on epistemology every other week. So, I would
encourage people though to, ask those tough questions about all these things. I mean, even those who are not going to church, that's something I'm struggling with now, where I have a handful of folks who just will not come back. And, what I think they're waiting for me to say is it's perfectly safe. Come to church. Right. I can't say that. But then when you ask them, well, by what standard are you kind of measuring things as when, you know, you'll deem it safe to come back? And they don't even know, like they haven't thought it through. So I think for a lot of folks, they're just waiting for the government to say, hey, it's safe. Go ahead.
Yeah. To tell them.
Or anybody, and, like you said, they might even be waiting for you to say that they're waiting for a source of authority. Or they might be waiting for me to
say it. But I mean, I can't honestly say that. Right. I mean, I don't, there's a big part of this is that, right. That every time we go out in this world, we take on risk, right. Every time we are around other people, who knows what diseases they have, you know, we're always at risk for something.
You're at a big risk if you drive on the roads in Southern California.
Yeah. Pretty, it's pretty, pretty substantial. Always says, He goes, you have a higher, statistically higher chance of dying on the freeway to go get your COVID-19 test than you do actually dying from COVID-19.
That's probably true. Don't you think?
I know the statistics on fatal accidents on the California freeways are high. I don't know what the the percentage of basically people on the freeway every day, but yeah, I mean everybody knows it's dangerous. So I mean if you drive on major freeways, the 101, the 5, 405 in California, you see brutal accidents.
Maybe especially the 101.
Yeah, you see see brutal accidents nearly every time you get on it.
Yeah,
and so yeah.
Yeah, so people should be asking that. I mean, you can't make decisions for folks, but, I guess you could, but, they need to think of these things through and ask themselves those questions. You know, at what point are they going to start getting on with life again?
Somebody can do the math, the current contraction rate, the current rate of people dying per contraction of COVID-19 versus the rate of fatal accidents per driver.
I would add this one to the thing Paul
says. Seems calculable to me.
If you've done other things, let's say you've gone to a protest of any kind, of the kind that's been going on, and haven't been going to church, ask yourself, can you ask yourself why you deemed it okay to go to that? Why not church? Was it actually, in your head, was it a perceived medical issue, or was it an importance issue? If it is a perceived medical issue, is there something you think your church can do to make it so you can gather all these sorts of things where instead of being passive and just letting people tell you what is what, ask questions, ask if the assumptions are neutral, ask if there's a loaded philosophy behind it. And doing those and asking those questions and asking are there assumptions, are there philosophies, are there politics behind these things? Doesn't make you a conspiracy theorist. It makes you inquisitive. And the answer may be no. But oftentimes, and I think things like that article that I read at the beginning show that the answer is actually quite frequently yes. There is something else there too to consider. So,
well, after this episode, I really feel like I need to go to church. So.
Yeah,
maybe I'll see.
Hey,
Paul,
you're
this
welcome
Sunday.
Any Sunday. We're open. Come on down.
All right,
that's Grace Lutheran Church, Ventura, California. For those people in California,
that's right. That's right.
Yeah, if you're in California, it can't be more than a 7-hour drive, right?
That's right.
It could be.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Thinking Fellows. If you've been a long-time listener of the show and you'd like to help us out, or maybe you're a short-time listener of the show and you'd like to help us out, there's two ways you can do that. You can go to the Apple Podcasts app if you have an iPhone, or you can go there via web browser if you do not use Apple products, and you can review the show. I put the link in the top of the show notes of every episode there. And you could also consider donating to 1517 and go to 1517.org/donate. 1517 supports the Thinking Fellows and all the other podcasts on the 1517 Podcast Network. Your donations can go to keep podcasts and other projects at 1517 going. And again, I'll have a donate link in the top of the show notes as well. Hey, again, thank you for listening to this episode. We'll catch you next time. Bye.